Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest today is Meng Jian. She is the author of a new short story collection, Self-Portrait with Ghosts. Meng is also the author of Little Gods, a finalist for both the New York Public Library's Young Lions Fiction Award and the Los Angeles Times Art Cytobomb Award for First Fiction. And Meng, welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me, Hopeton. It's a pleasure to be here.
So normally, Meng, I would ask someone to describe the plot of the novel. Yeah. So now I'm going to ask you to describe the plots or summarize your short story collection.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe a short story collection because there's 10 stories in this book and they're all completely different. I did write them all at the same time, around the same time, all during the Trump presidency and the first year of the COVID pandemic. So they're interested in questions that I'm always interested in, but that were perhaps heightened during that time, questions of grief and death and life, and specifically the lives of Chinese women. And also layered through these stories are questions of, I guess, like what it means to live as an individual self, a self with desires and hopes amid times of overwhelming disaster, I guess, when we're sort of feeling like disaster is coming at us from all directions in the news, in the future, and also news of disaster from the past as well, as we sort of, as a country, reconsider American history and bring up stories that have been untold in our histories.
So what inspired you to put this collection together?
I always write short stories, sometimes as a distraction or as a break from a novel project. And sometimes you get an idea and you just know it's a container for it is a little bit smaller. It feels like something that you can sort of just walk around in your head. And that's when I know it's a story. And at a certain point, while writing stories, I started to see that some of the stories were speaking to each other. Then I started to conceive of a collection of stories. And when I started thinking of these stories as speaking to each other and belonging in the same book, it really helped me understand how to finish the stories I was still working on. And also, it generated new ideas for other stories that might fill in some of the absences or the questions that the other stories were asking, but perhaps not fully entertaining.
What was it like putting together a collection of short stories as opposed to the novel you wrote, Little Gods?
Yeah, so Little Gods was not just the novel, but it was my first novel. And since I don't come from, you know, a literary background, I didn't know any writers growing up. When I was writing it, I really had no idea if I would be able to publish it, you know, what would become of it. And it felt like this thing that, it felt like almost like, you know, I would write this novel and then maybe I would just like die or like disappear off the face of the earth. Like it was my culminating work. And so I felt like I felt this pressure looking back now to put everything into it, everything, every part of what I felt to be my fragmented life and my fragmented self and to somehow make it cohere. And so writing, after I published the book and realized, you know, I could write more books, it kind of took the pressure off, and putting this story collection together was so much more playful and joyful and fun. Not only do I understand now that I have many other books I can write, so it helps me sort of focus my lens and not feel this pressure to stuff everything into one book. Stories themselves give you more opportunity to focus on one subject matter, or also to experiment and do something risky that you know you can't necessarily sustain across the course of an entire novel because they're shorter. Yeah, so it was more fun and playful and joyful to write.
One of my favorite short stories in the book is Suffering. And it's one of my favorite short stories because I am a crime fiction whodunit fan. So talk about the crafting of that story.
Yeah, Suffering is a story that it's pretty early on in the collection. And for me, it really introduces one of the major questions of the story collection, which is, why are writers interested in looking at human suffering? Is it kind of a voyeuristic interest? Why are we constantly making up characters and making them suffer?
Can I answer that question? Because you literally write, she thinks she will be rewarded by enduring suffering.
Yeah, well, that's what the character thinks.
Right.
But there's an I narrator in that story who feels sort of ambivalent about why she's watching this person. So one of the things that story does, and the title story, and a lot of the stories in this collection, is add a sort of meta-fictional element where the stories are being told, but there's also an element that pulls the reader out of the story and tells them, like, this is a fictional story, points at the fictionality of the stories. And I think one of the big questions that I had while writing this book was, what is the point of art? What is the point of storytelling? Is it good? Is it bad? And especially living in these times where fake news is all around us, I was constantly asking myself, what is what I'm doing? Creating fake stories about fake people to manipulate people, readers' emotions, make them feel and think things. How is that different from fake news? And I felt really ethically conflicted by that. So I wanted to write stories that sort of show their mechanism. So if you think of The Wizard of Oz, I wanted to write stories that created the beautiful mirage. As in Suffering, there is this sort of detective story running through it that makes the reader question what's happening, what's happening, what's happening. But then I also wanted to pull the curtain back and show, the little writer twiddling at the controls behind the curtain. And hopefully, my hope was that readers would feel sucked into the story, but then question what was making them feel that way and understand that they were inside a fictional reality and hopefully, become better consumers of story so that when they go into the world and are, barreled from at all sides with storytelling and fake and real news, that they're able to sort of confront those various fictions better, I guess.
Well, this story, sometimes I forgot the meta portion of it, that person that I guess is fixing her computer that is sort of hearing this story. And the story reminded me of the Voltaire story of Candide, because it seemed like so many bad things was happening to the protagonist's little sister. No, that's her little sister that lives there. Boy, she has some relationships in this novel. Because part of it, I saw sort of this the little sister that's made it big in America versus her not making it big. The resentment she has of little sister, and sort of this sort of a country versus city kind of conflict I saw also in this story.
Yeah, those are themes that that really preoccupy me. In Suffering, the protagonist, I guess, Ling, is feels emotionally in conflict with little sister, who is a successful banker in America. And there's another story in the collection called First Love, which is about a nanny, a woman who goes to work as a nanny for her former high school, or not high school, elementary school best friend, who's now made it and lives in the big city. I mean, these are questions that are always going to preoccupy me on the level of, you know, individual human lives and dramas of the self, because I think they're questions that are more and more relevant to lots of people these days. You know, are in America and around the world, we're constantly, we're constantly being sold this dream that you can be whoever you want, and that social mobility is this great thing that you should work hard for. And I'm really interested in the lives of people who have been socially mobile, and also the lives of the people in the communities that they've left behind as they've become socially mobile, and how selves are formed and reformed and created in those situations.
Well, I'll tell you, clearly when you were putting this collection together, you were looking at it from sort of a deep philosophical view, as you've, you know, more or less alluded to, because of course the times we're living in is, or just some of the most contentious times of my adult life, at least in terms of what's going on in terms of the health system, health and the politics and the environment. But I think what really sells this story for me is that readers are not thinking, I'm looking for philosophy. They're looking at, well, these are some great stories. So you sort of back into the philosophical element because you're just looking for those stories, like the story about Philip is Dead, where the protagonist worked her way up, wasn't born with money, had to work her way up, as opposed to Philip, who was born to money. And they're very different views of what art is. She's an aspiring photographer, and he's an over the top artist who says, don't you think one moment of pure freedom is worth more than some arbitrary ideas of good and evil? And is he a nihilist?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah,
he
Phil. Is.
And he considers himself a Nietzschean. thank you for saying that about the philosophical element of these stories. I do really hope that my stories are working on multiple levels, you know, that if you're looking to just go into a story and like get lost in a fictional world and care about characters, that they sort of pull you in and like, you know, spit you out at the end. but that also that when or if you reread them, that other elements come through. So I guess in some ways I do think of I do feel like I'm like secretly putting some like medicine in the cake or something like that.
Well, I think the what I really appreciate about this collection of short stories is when you go back, I read the collection cover to cover, and then I go back and start thinking about what these stories mean. And I tell you, when I read Odd Women, the last story in the collection, and the way you structured that story, where I was asking myself, what's the connection? And then as we worked our way through the stories and saw the connection of some of these characters, and really just, I mean, that story itself, it's my favorite short story in your collection, by the way, here, Odd Women, because it was such a deep look into identity. I mean, just an incredibly deep look into identity and the different various ways one can think of one's identity, from the character whose identity depends on who she's seeing, from the character who keeps creating these duplicates of herself to try to meet all these different sides of herself. I won't be a spoiler here, but I absolutely loved odd women and the thought of identity and how much your identity may depend on other people, how much you may want to create different identities of yourself. What if you have the opportunity? And all of this with that sort of, as you mentioned earlier, I'll just call it this dystopian edge, this dystopian, slightly science fiction look into the future where things aren't, as you said earlier, aren't what we would hope them to be. And but so tell me about Odd Women. That's my favorite short story in this collection. You got to explain how you put that together.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that story is really close to my heart too. It's the one speculative story in the collection. You know, like all stories, there are so many different things that sort of come together to make it. I'll tell you that it started with the character Vandana, who has this superpower that disappears. So she's able to sort of walk through walls, make herself immaterial. And she came to me while I was, jogging in San Francisco during the first early phases of lockdown. And it felt, I'm sure everyone has some sort of memory of that time where you're if you live in a city, you're seeing the city as it always is, but it's totally empty. And it feels like you've just been tipped into a slightly different version of reality. Like, you know that what you're seeing is real, but you can't quite, your brain can't quite believe it. So I started to think of a world that was sort of similar to this one, but just slightly off its axis. And around the same time, the pandemic came right after my first book was published, right after Little Gods was published in January 2020. And I felt as like a writer who'd been working for, 5 to 10 years by myself at my art, and not having been published yet, I'm so sorry. I hope you can edit this out a little. I'm going to close something because I keep on getting these beeping notifications that are distracting me. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so in January 2020, after Little Gods was published, and I went from being a writer to an author, I sort of felt like I had lost my superpower a little bit, because being an author was such a different experience. It was like taking this thing that was so private and dear to me, writing, and it became a job. It became something that I started to see as having like a use in our capitalist system. And so I started to think about a character who I felt like I had lost my superpower in some ways. And so I started to imagine a character who had lost her superpower once she tried to make it useful. I was also thinking about, superhero stories. I lived with someone who's really into the Marvel universe and like Star Wars and like all of those stories that I got really into them too. You know, they're really fun to watch and really captivating. But I also felt like I could believe them enough to watch them and like consume them and be entertained by them. But I didn't think I really believed them enough to be able to write them. I think there's a part of me that feels through the process of writing The Odd Woman, that the story of the individual hero who's going to save the world from extinction is just, it feels like it's run its course. You know, it doesn't feel like, I don't feel like that story gives me real hope because I don't believe in it. So I started to wonder about, how to tell a superhero story that I could believe in. And in this case, I ended up taking, I've always felt that people's greatest strengths were often also their greatest weaknesses. But sometimes the things that give us the most joy are also the things that bring us a lot of pain. And so I conceived of three women who had superpowers that were blessings and curses at the same time. At the same time, I had recently read Vivian Gornick's The Odd Woman and the City, which is about friendship. And I started to think about, and friendship is a question and a theme that's running through the other stories in the book too, especially female friendship. So I started to think about, the loneliness of these women who had these kind of terrible superpowers, and how they might find each other.
Speaking of friendship, the story about Selena and Ruthie, which tracks them from middle school all the way, I guess, into adulthood. Selena being the Chinese immigrant who becomes friends with Ruthie, who's bold and fearless and Jewish. And tracking that story, when we talk about friendship and sort of Selena's path to the point where, once again, I don't want to spoil the end of the book, but I love the way that story works its way out and what it sort of reveals to the pain and the suffering that sometimes young women in middle school face and the challenges to face and some of the hidden trauma that they've experienced that no one's aware of.
Yeah. When we think about the subjects of literature, often we think of like love stories and like war stories or like stories of heroes, right? And of course there are some love stories in this book too. But often we don't think about stories about friendship, but so much of our lives on a day-to-day basis are made of our friendships. And what I'm really interested in my writing is actually to like pull away from those grand narratives that are often the subject of literature and to instead focus on dailiness and how it feels to be alive from moment to moment. So I think that's one of the reasons that I'm drawn to friendship. Selena and Ruthie, I was really interested in exploring, it's a story that really focuses on like their teenage and preteen years of these two girls and the ways in which they learn how to become women, and also how to be as girls. And it's also interested in this question of what it means to be sheltered. So there's a crucial moment in that story where Ruthie, this friendship breaks at a certain point. And I don't think that's too much of a spoiler, but there's a crucial moment when Ruthie tells Selena, you're so sheltered. And in some ways she is, but Ruthie is sheltered too. Selena is sheltered from sort of the ways in which American culture conceives of girls as women overly sexualizes them and is sheltered in a way from rape culture because as a Chinese American girl, she's almost desexualized and invisible. But Ruthie is sheltered from the racism that Selena experiences as a Chinese American in an American public school. Ruthie is sheltered from she understands that Selena lives with her dad and her mom is dead. And Ruthie understands that that's a fact of her life, but she doesn't really get it. She's sheltered from Selena's poverty as well. So there's a way in which these two, I was thinking about how these two best friends really, really wanted to reach each other, but because of the way that the society they grew up in was structured, they were sheltered from each other's like some really core essence of the other that led them both to fail each other in a way.
One of the things I always like to do when I read novels and stories is always point out a phrase that just sticks with me, maybe a phrase that I'll use in some conversation with somebody. So here's the phrase that you used in a story, suffering, that hopefully I'll never have to say about somebody. And brother's wife, a viper whose greed runs green in her blood.
Yeah. I hope you don't have to say that about anyone either.
I'm hoping that I don't have to say that, but what... I guess, you know, in the crafting, I mean, is that just something that just comes stream of consciousness? A viper, so I'm thinking snake, green, yeah. Whose greed runs green in her blood. Is that, have you used that insult before?
Oh, I'm a pretty nice person. I think that, you know, I think one of the sort of paradoxes of being a writer is that I think most writers are probably pretty boring people. I know I'm a pretty boring person. You know, I spend most of my days like just sitting alone and typing words or reading words, right? That doesn't lead to many opportunities to insult people, except for the fictional people. It's great that you pointed out that phrase and that story, because I was also, in addition to suffering, like one of the core emotions that I was trying to channel in that story was bitterness and resentment. And the bitterness and resentment that comes from suffering and telling yourself that your suffering is going to reward you in some way, right? That's just something that I think I've seen in a lot of the women in my life, because Chinese women, I think in particular, at least the Chinese women in my family, are told that socialized to think that that they should sacrifice for others, and that's good, and. But if you just keep sacrificing for others your entire life, you can grow quite resentful. So that's the feeling that resulted in that phrase.
Well, I want to end this on a positive note. The grandmother and the tree.
Yes.
And the daughter, and that's speculative, I guess. I don't know what the proper literary term for that story is, but I really enjoyed that story.
Are you talking about the garden and the locust?
Yes.
Yes. So the garden is a story about a woman during lockdown who's just walking her dog and looking at all the fruit trees. I wrote that story in lockdown while I was walking my dog and looking at fruit trees. But, one of the core emotions that fueled that story was actually homesickness during lockdown and during this entire pandemic season, which still doesn't have an end. I started to feel more like an exile than an immigrant because China's borders are pretty closed right now because of the zero COVID policy. And most of my family lives in China, and it's been probably the longest time in my life that I haven't gone to see them. And so I started to, one of the ways I guess I tried to comfort myself during that time, to comfort myself from my homesickness, was to imagine meeting my family members on the streets of San Francisco. And in some ways, you're right, there is that's a speculative, almost like magical realist element. But also one of the things that story, The Garden, is interested in is technology as magical realism, right? Because at the same time, I was able to meet my family members in the streets of San Francisco through Zoom or WeChat, you know? And so that story was my way of playing with, I think, this feeling that a lot of us probably had during the pandemic of just being very far away from people we love, very isolated, but also getting these like little perhaps magical moments of connection through that loneliness and isolation.
And I can imagine thinking as you're on these Zoom calls, because like you, we had lots of Zoom calls, literally being able to reach through the screen.
Yeah.
And touch your loved one, or in this case, to pull the loquat branch down and pluck two.
Yes, yes. And I mean, food has a deep sort of like nostalgic element for me. That was the loquat. I mean, that's a detail that did come from my life. I discovered that there were all these loquat trees in my neighborhood. I hadn't eaten a loquat outside of China. So I'm sure you've had this experience, Hopeton, of like eating something that just takes you back to your grandmother's home.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So my connection is making gumbo and etouffee, or more gumbo and red beans and rice, which is fond memories of my grandmother making, you know, gumbo, my grandmother making red beans and rice, my mother making gumbo, mother making red beans and rice. I cook gumbo, red beans and rice. I taught my daughters how to cook gumbo and red beans and rice. So it only took for one of them. Only one of them faithfully is continuing the tradition, but it's continuing.
Yeah. And then their grandchildren will also think of, you know, maybe think of you and have a little tiny piece of your grandmother in their,
I love this short story collection. Mun-Jin, thank you so much for being a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for reading these stories, Hopeton, and for this conversation. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.